The most common practice now is for women to be gang raped by the regime's militiamen. And after they are gang raped, they are immobilized, and rats and mice are inserted into their vaginas. Those who survive the experience and who can speak are afraid of the social stigma. In more conservative societies, it's not uncommon for a girl to be beheaded if she loses her virginity prior to being married, because her virginity is associated with family honor. So these victims become the victims of multiple injustices. With the women, it is particularly ugly. And I think if we don't talk about the ugliness, we become complicit. So it's very difficult to talk about, and it's very difficult to hear, but I want to repeat it a couple of times so you can visualize.
Rafif Shuajati is not alone in drawing world attention to the horrific and underreported stories of sexualized torture in Syria. She also draws on the work of Women Under Siege and the International Rescue Committee, organizations that are also investigating rape and other forms of sexualized violence in conflict.
There were some reports by the Women Under Siege Project and the International Rescue Committee. And a couple of months ago, you can look this up, the International Rescue Committee issued a report in which they had documented that a group of women was raped. They were gang raped. And after the rape was over, the operatives said, "So you want freedom? Here's your freedom." And they put out their cigarettes in the women's vaginas.
Rape is never an easy topic for women to discuss. Ellen O'Malley Dunlop, CEO of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, reminded her audience of this when she recalled the gang rape of a 16-year-old girl in Shaw McDermott Street in Dublin, which was a catalyst for the radical change that took place in Ireland.
35 years ago, in 1978, 5,000 women marched in Dublin in the Reclaim the Night campaign that was sweeping through all the major cities in Europe at that time. The catalyst for that march in Dublin was the ferocious gang rape of a 16-year-old girl in Sean McDermott Street. Rape and sexual abuse were topics not talked about in Irish society at that time. However, these heinous crimes were being committed, and committed mainly with impunity and in secret against women, against men, against children and vulnerable adults. The 1-800-77-88-88, which is the national 24-hour helpline, was set up in 1979 following the march, and it took 78 calls in the first year. In 2012, there were over 10,000 calls to the helpline. Attitudes to sexual crimes in Ireland can still be caught up in the old myths of "she was asking for it," "look how she was dressed," "children forget," etc., etc. Attitudes have a long shelf life, and the cultural myths we live by, whereby women and children are perceived as secondary to men, still prevail.
So, we know from Ireland that there's a social stigma associated with rape. She asked for it. Her skirt was too short. This doesn't happen in Syria. This is not the case in a conflict area in Syria. She didn't ask for it, and her skirt wasn't too short. She might have been wearing a full veil. What happened is that she's perceived to be opposed to the regime, and there are no boundaries. And what the regime has done is effectively broken down the family unit, because in many cases they are forcing children or husbands or brothers to watch the gang rapes and then the rats and the mice. So they've broken down the family unit, they've broken down the community, they have broken down society, and most importantly is they have broken down the individual psyche.
It seems that in the Syrian conflict, that men are now more than just witnesses to sexual violence. According to Women Under Siege, they are also experiencing rape directly, as Rafif explained by citing the personal story of a friend.
I can tell you a personal anecdote of a friend who relayed a story about how a mother received a phone call from the Air Force Intelligence Branch, which is notorious for being the having the worst, most severe torture. They called the mother and they said, "Did your son have weak bones?" And the mother said, "No, why?" The operative said, "Because his wrist broke so easily." "Did he have any anal problems?" And the mother said, "Why?" And he said, "Because the steel rod penetrated him so easily." It was very, very difficult for Syrians to talk about rape to begin with because of the association with honor. And it is so prevalent now that it's much more openly spoken about. And the fact that men are also being raped has helped them to understand that it is a crime. And so when I've discussed rape now, I mean, in my nature, I'm very open and I'm not that shy. But regime operatives have attacked me thinking that that can sort of repress me. And they say, "Look, she's saying the R word. Oh my gosh, she's vagina on TV. I can't believe she did that." And they were thinking that that would rally support. And in fact, what I've seen is the opposite, that much more conservative people have thanked me for just saying it. We all of us, no matter how shy, have to just say it. It is what it is. And until we can all say it, it will continue. We have to say it and confront it. What we're trying to bring about is a society that accepts that rape is a crime that must be prosecuted, that there is no shame in being raped, and that rape or sexualized torture as a tool of war must be prosecuted as a war crime. In today's Syria, what you have is armed groups, certainly of all kinds of backgrounds, but what you also have is a regime that continues to try to crush any sort of civil disobedience movement with military equipment. So it's very normal for a residential community in any part of Syria to see a Scud missile coming in and landing in their community. The regime is using Scud missiles against civilians. It is extremely common for people who are starving to death to learn that there is bread available, and they line up at the bakery, and the regime sends in the cluster bombs or the barrel bombs. I don't know if you know what barrel bombs are. These are a Syrian invention. They're huge barrels, and they're full of diesel fuel and metal scraps, so that on impact, the fuel ignites and the scraps fly, and they cause maximum damage to civilians.
Despite the horrific stories told by Rafif, there was some cause for optimism with the possible collaboration of Rafif's organization with the Irish Rape Crisis Center in training Syrian women to support and document the thousands of stories of rape now emerging as a consequence of the conflict in Syria.
We will implement a pilot project in one of the liberated areas in Syria, and provided we don't suffer an airstrike, we can see how successful that is and how we can encourage women to come forward and then replicate the program across the rest of the country.
If it was possible to get funding from Irish Aid and the Foreign Affairs, we could certainly look at training people here to go back to Syria. We couldn't send people to Syria at the moment in the current climate, but we certainly could explore training people here in Ireland if we had the funding to do that.
I will be putting together a proposal on opening a rape crisis center, and I'll be looking for international donors at the level of international NGOs and foreign governments. And I know you can't send trainers into Syria, but if you can send trainers to Turkey, we can bring Syrian activists into Turkey and they can receive the training there. And what we would expect from these participants is that they go back and train others.
As a secular Syrian, Rafif argued that despite the growing number of jihadists now fighting in Syria against Bashar al-Assad, she believed that the majority of Syrians were committed to building a pluralist and non-sectarian society.
Yes, there are many jihadist extremists in Syria, and they are growing every day. I can say, because of the people I represent, that Syrians, for the most part, are a secular people. We have very devout Muslims in Syria. We have very devout Christians in Syria. We have very devout agnostics like myself. And we all respect each other's backgrounds. We all respect each other's right to practice whatever religion or non-religion we choose. And because we are really the crossroads of civilization, we appreciate our culture. We appreciate that the first synagogues were recorded in Syria, that the earliest churches still stand in Syria, and that the most important Islamic shrines are in Syria.
Earlier in the day, Ronan Tynan, Valerie Hughes and Maurice Hegarty of the Irish-Syrian Solidarity Campaign met with TDs and senators from all parties in Dáil Éireann. Rafif briefed them about the horrific consequences of the rape crisis in Syria, and while she was anxious to see the conflict brought to an end as someone committed to non-violence, she recognised that without a no-fly zone and at least defensive arms being provided to the opposition, many more Syrians will die.
It certainly would be immensely valuable if people email their TDs and senators and the Foreign Minister Eamon Gilmore and Joe Costello to ask them to support that initiative. Because one of the points that Rafi really brought home very forcefully at the meeting, and certainly for me as well, is the fact that even as you make the point, even if that statement has no backbone, the fact that Irish politicians are making that statement, it might even help encourage others fighting with Assad, soldiers fighting to defect.
If you feel that you can't, you know, act on a particular political position, then please act on the humanitarian position, on the women's issues. There is always something that you can do.
As the meeting concluded, I asked some of those who attended what they had taken from the evening.
Sexual torture, you know, I mean, like, and yet it's getting no coverage, no, like, what is wrong with this world?
I think what Maurice was saying as well, just like that need to kind of think of something concrete rather than kind of coming away and saying it's terrible, it's awful, you know, because then you're nearly, it's that kind of almost, well, sometimes they call it conflict porn kind of thing, you know, I mean, that you just kind of, like, it's almost entertainment, you know, I mean, like.
And whatever, it's in the news, it says unverified reports.
Unverified,
I find that so insulting, really. It's just, you know, is that if it's not verified, what about the victims?
Yeah. It's very hard to listen to those accounts. Sorry, that's why I can't do. But what I would like to say is that people are very, very much confused about what's happening, as they were during the Bosnia conflict. But if there is one thing that, you know, Bosnia has taught us, is that, you know, we really have to respond to humanitarian crisis, and we have to do our best to stop it. It doesn't cost anything, you know, to do an email, to tweet, or to do, you know, whatever, you know. Send a letter, whatever we can to voice our outrage at what's happening and really to show solidarity.
This is an Esperanza production for Human Rights. More information about Esperanza's work can be found at www.esperanzaproductions.com.